Welcome to Take Note on WBSU. I'm Patty Satalia. America's war on cancer began in the early 1970s, and New York's Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center was the research institution leading the charge. According to a new book and documentary, the center wasn't always truthful with the American public. When it came to Laetrile therapy, at the time a widely publicized alternative cancer treatment, our next guest says they lied about its effectiveness and suppressed their own positive test results. Was there a cover-up? And if so, why? We'll talk about that. Our guest is Ralph Moss, a science writer for more than 40 years. He's written 10 books and 3 documentary films on cancer. His newest book is Doctored Results, The Suppression of Laetrile at Sloan Kettering Institute for Cancer Research. The documentary film Second Opinion by filmmaker Eric Marola is based on that book. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
In 1974, just a month or so after receiving your doctorate in classics from Stanford University, you were hired by Sloan Kettering's public relations department to write articles about cancer and to brief the lay public about what the center was doing to contribute to the war on cancer. Tell us a bit about this job.
Well, it was a dream job because I got to re-educate myself, as it were, in science, but I always kept the outsider perspective, which is what they wanted me to do, having had a good education, but not a scientific education, not coming at it with the preconceptions that somebody who was an insider would have. I was able to ask the kinds of questions that I think our readership was interested in, the general public, potential donors, and non-scientific employees.
Which brings us back to your book. In 1977, 3 years after they hired you, Sloan Kettering fired you for publicly accusing the institution of lying to the public about something called Laetrile, an alternative cancer treatment that was widely used in Mexico but banned in the United States. First, tell us about this very controversial compound that was sending desperate Americans across the border to Mexico.
Right. The compound is a well-known chemical. It's found in hundreds of different plants, most conspicuously in apricot kernels and peach kernels and bitter almonds. And it's called amygdalin. That's the scientific name. It's well described in the scientific literature, so we know exactly what it is. It's part of the plant's own defense system because it can be broken up quite easily to release cyanide. So plants use it to prevent overeating by pests and different insects and so forth. In a very roundabout way, a man named Krebs in San Francisco decided that this would be a good anti-cancer agent and started to promote this in the 1940s. And then it sort of caught fire, as it were, in the 50s and 60s. A couple of popular books came out, and a doctor in Mexico named Contreras opened a clinic to treat people using Laetrile.
As injections.
As injections.
No one was eating apricot kernels.
No, but apricot kernels and peach kernels had been used in traditional Chinese medicine for hundreds, if not thousands of years. So it did have a folk use and still used to this day. So what happened was that some people who were involved with this compound promulgated the idea that Laetrile was a quote-unquote cure for cancer. And this took on a kind of a mass hysteria aspect to it. And around 1978, that was about the peak of the craze. Newsweek estimated about 50 to 70,000 Americans had gone across the border to get Laetrile. So you can imagine a lot of clinics grew up. The trade was booming. There were questions raised about the quality of the compound, which had since been renamed Laetrile, or some people called it vitamin B17. And it grew into a kind of a big food fight between the medical establishment, which pointed to the absurdity of some of the claims being made, and kind of ragtag army of alternative-minded people who wanted the freedom to use it.
So here you are, this young public affairs associate at Sloan Kettering, and one of your first assignments is to do a biography on a senior and elderly research scientist there by the name of Dr. Kanamutsu Segura, who was doing research on this laetril.
Yes.
Tell us what he was finding.
Well, I mean, much to my amazement, on my second interview with him, I naively sort of asked him what he was working on, and he told me it was amygdalin, and it took a minute to translate that into the laetril that we were getting so many angry letters and phone calls about.
People wanting this institution, the number one cancer research institute in the country, to back it, to make it available,
to validate it,
make it available to the American public.
Correct. And I, just by accident, happened to be sort of the point man for answering the public on this issue. And I was just giving out a standard statement saying we were testing it. So far, we hadn't found anything important with it, but we would announce it in good time, which I believed. So when I interviewed Dr. Sugiura, he told me that he was currently working on it and that he had found positive results with it. And the most important of those positive results was that it dramatically stopped the spread of cancer from the breasts of these experimental animals to the lungs. A typical experiment might be 80% of the animals that didn't get the laetril had lung metastases or secondary growths, and only 20% of the animals that got the laetril or the amygdalin had these metastases. Metastasis is the most dangerous thing in cancer. It's what kills 90% of the people who die of cancer. So obviously, this was rather important. If you have an agent in hand that can stop the spread of the disease, you'd think that would be of, you know, prime importance. But Segura expressed to me already that he was having difficulty in getting his ideas or his findings accepted by some of the people downtown. We were doing the interview in Rye, New York, and downtown was 68th Street in Manhattan. And so he showed me in his book the actual shrinkage of small metastases and some fabulous numbers concerning the spread of the disease. So that was how I first met him.
And we're talking about a scientist who had an excellent reputation throughout the industry.
Yes. I mean, these are important things about him. He was very mature. He was a man about 80 years old, retired, full member emeritus of Sloan Kettering Institute, which is like a full professor. He never had been involved in any scandal or promulgated any off-label or unconventional treatment.
And he had no dog in this fight.
Had no dog in the fight. He wasn't even paid extra for doing this. And I think it's important to understand that nobody in experimental cancer research had been at it longer or had a better reputation. He had started before World War I. Catching rats in the basement of Roosevelt Hospital as experimental subjects. There were no animal supply houses in those days. So when they started chemotherapy, and he was among maybe half a dozen people who was responsible for chemotherapy, they had to improvise. He had gone on and won every award in the field. He had had his picture on the cover of Cancer Research Journal. Many, many honors, both in his native country, Japan, and in the United States.
And one of the things you write is that what really impressed Dr. Segura is that in something like 9 tests over 3 years using 3 different systems, laetril appeared not to be toxic.
Yes. In fact, the animals that were injected with the laetril, he said, had glossier coats. He could see even within 1 day of giving them the injections that they were friskier, they were healthier. He could tell which animals were injected or not injected with the laetril by their appearance. And then, of course, when they were autopsied by the extent of the metastases.
So you went back to your public affairs department and said, why are we being so noncommittal about laetril when our esteemed researcher is saying that it's doing very good things?
Well, yeah, I went back and I told my boss, Jerry Delaney, what I had heard and found, and I was quite amazed at this. And Jerry knew a little bit about it already. There had been an early leak of some documents that had alerted the scientific community that something was happening at Sloan. I didn't know that. So Jerry instructed me to sort of follow the story, and I think that was a good instruction. Of course, it also enabled him to know how much I knew at the time, which I didn't think about at the time it was happening. But that gave me a kind of imprimatur to continue to connect with Dr. Segura, and we actually, given the disparity of our ages, we actually became friends and colleagues. And so I had an inside seat, as it were, to each step of the process of the testing of Laetrol.
So tell us a little bit about the three top administrators at Sloan Kettering who were saying something quite different from what Dr. Segura was finding in his lab.
Yes. Of course, this eventually involved a good portion of Sloan Kettering Institute, but you had some people who were more, let's say, more inclined to see importance in this as well as in non-conventional treatments in general. The most important person other than Segura in all of this was Lloyd Old. And Lloyd Old was the vice president of Sloan Kettering Institute. He was a man in his 30s, among the most brilliant people I've ever had the honor and pleasure to know. And once the top administration, which came actually from the White House, had decided to do
because, of course, President Nixon had declared the war on cancer in 1970,
correct.
1971.
And his so-called cancer czar was Benno Schmidt, and Benno Schmidt also happened to be vice chairman of Memorial Sloan Kettering. So there was an intimate connection between Sloan Kettering and the White House and the whole cancer program at that point.
And there was an interest in finding something other than this slash-and-burn approach to treating cancer, which was chemotherapy.
Right. I mean, although chemotherapy had hardly played itself out at that point, but yes, there was an interest. I think what happened is when Nixon declared the war on cancer in late 1971, it stirred up all kinds of feelings in the public. I mean, it raised the idea of a cancer cure, and the Congress and the National Cancer Establishment, as it were, made a terrible blunder. They promised the public that they would cure cancer in time for the bicentennial, July 4th, 1976. So they set themselves an impossible goal, which everybody whom I knew at Sloan was laughing about and thought this was ridiculous. But this is what the public thought. All it would take would be some relatively small effort. And, you know, like we got to the moon in a few years, we'd conquer cancer in a few years. Although the scientists didn't believe it, but it was just sort of an irresistible political urge, not just Nixon, but others, to say, give us the money and we'll clear this thing up for you. This was supposed to be, you know, a five-year job. And Laetrol really came to the fore in this period of time when people thought that the cure for cancer was at hand.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Our guest is Ralph Moss. In 1974, he was hired by Sloan Kettering's Public Relations Department to brief the American public on the center's work in the war on cancer. 3 years later, he was fired after publicly accusing the institution of suppressing information on a widely sought but banned alternative cancer therapy. His new book, Doctored Results, The Suppression of Laetrol at Sloan Kettering Institute for Cancer Research, is his account of what happened. I asked him to explain why Sloan Kettering's top administrators were saying the opposite of what one of their own leading researchers was finding.
I said that there had been a leak in late 72, 73 of some of Segura's results, and this created a lot of consternation among people who had already gone on record as saying that Laetrol was worthless quackery. And they may have truly believed it was worthless quackery, but suddenly they're confronted with an esteemed scientist saying, no, but actually, if you do it this way, and namely look for lung metastases in mice with spontaneous tumors, it actually does work. And this was, you know, if you think of your own deepest beliefs, and then suddenly one day you wake up and you hear that somebody of irreproachable standards had come up with something that totally contradicted what you believed most firmly, your inclination is to deny the new facts. I mean, we all do this. So this was what happened. And the person who put the pressure on Sloan Kettering, to my knowledge, first of all, and probably most importantly, was a man named Art Holub, who was the reigning person at American Cancer Society, the executive vice president. And he wrote to Robert A. Good, who was the president of Sloan Kettering, and said, in essence, you're embarrassing us with your statements on Laetrol, and we would like you to consult our files before you further damage the name of my esteemed alma mater, because he had been a breast surgeon at Sloan Kettering. This came to light accidentally, this letter, in 75. But that's the kind of, that was veiled language.
Well, what happens when powerful people denounce something as quackery?
Well, it's pretty much off the table then. The impact is still felt today. There's still research being done on laetrile, amygdalin around the world, but very little in the United States. Almost nothing, I would say. When I want to communicate with scientists who are doing this sort of research, I have to go to Spain, China, Korea, Mexico, different places. But there's, you know, nobody wants to touch it because it's a could be a career killer.
Well, you actually quote the former head of the FDA, William Vaudra, who said, why would somebody pay $70,000 for chemotherapy when they can get Laetrile for 75 cents?
Yes.
Well, he was. Is that the crux of the problem?
That is. I wasn't sure about this until after I was fired in November of 77. I then had this sort of enforced period of unemployment for several years. And in that time, I wrote the book Cancer Industry. And that was my conclusion. After examining eight different controversies, it seemed to me that the bottom line was the bottom line, namely that there was a lot of money to be made in conventional, that's to say, patented drugs that could be sold in the standard way, FDA approved, sold by major pharmaceutical companies, by big pharma. And on the other hand, there was chump change to be made from the selling of the Laetrile. And
because it was easy to make?
Well, you think about how many apricot trees, how many apricots there are. Just take apricots and take California. I mean, if you've ever been out to that region, I have, and you drive from mile after mile after mile.
That's all you see.
It's all you see. It's amazing. But my point is, apricot kernels are the waste product of the apricot industry. So if you could find a use for it, of course, it would be beneficial. But it's so cheap, you could set up a good factory, manufacture this stuff, and as Vaudra said, 70 cents or something. Now, almost every cancer drug that's been approved in the last 3 years has come to about $100,000 per patient. So at $100,000 per patient, you have a blockbuster drug that's worth $1 billion in sales for you. Laetrile is always, as I say, chump change. It was still to this day very inexpensive.
What role did the American Cancer Society have in deciding which things to pursue and which things were considered quackery?
Yeah. Well, in the 60s and 70s, they were the decisive voice. And they had maintained a list called Unproven Methods of Cancer Management, which basically weeded out the treatments that they thought were worthless. And they invented this category, Unproven Methods.
I want to read to you something that I read on Wikipedia about you. It says, quote, Moss served as a science writer at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in the 1970s. He was fired in 1977 by Sloan Kettering after publicly accusing the institution of suppressing information on Laetrile, a now discredited alternative cancer treatment.
Right. Well, I never advocated the use of Laetrile. I never have. I remain.
But is it a discredited compound?
It was discredited. Absolutely. It was two things, really. One of them, two main things.
But should it be, I guess?
No, it should be a valid research topic. It should be picked up again in modern terms. And there is work along those lines going on in Barcelona and in Italy and in a number of other countries. It got discredited mainly because of these Sloan-Kettering tests, which seemed to cut the ground out from underneath the claims that it was effective in animal work. And secondly, because of a clinical trial done in 1981, published in 82, which seemed to show that it was no better than placebo in treating stage 4 cancer.
You explain all of this in your book, and you say it's important that readers understand how metastasis is discovered or evaluated. Yeah. You say what happened was that Segura was using the world standard to determine this, and Dr. Daniel Martin was using something called bioassay. Explain what you mean and why that's so important.
Excuse me. The condemnation or refutation of Dr. Segura's work was based upon the claim in the final paper, in the Sloan-Kettering paper, that Martin had discovered a more accurate way for determining the presence of metastases. And when they looked at it through that more accurate way, which is called the bioassay, there was no difference between the iatrogen-treated animals and the control animals. Segura used a method of visual observation of the lungs with his eyes and with a magnifying lens. And then they sent the lungs to the pathology department.
So independent pathologists
correct.
Are also looking at
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. Except where they instructed Segura that he had to do a bioassay, every one of his experiments was double-checked by one of five pathologists, who are named in the paper, actually, who then looked at it independently and then gave their judgment of whether the animal's lungs had cancer in them or not. And statistically, the pathologist agreed with Segura. I hired a Penn State statistician to actually go over the numbers for me to make sure, because I wanted somebody with a professional level education in statistics. And he did confirm that the pathologists were very strongly confirming what Segura said. So that was Segura's method, and it's the standard method even today.
And yet Sloan Kettering held a press conference
yes.
in June of 1977
right.
and said basically to the American public, this is useless.
Absolutely. I wrote the press release. So, I know where the bodies are buried.
How did it feel to say one thing and think another?
Oh, well, I was slowly going crazy at that moment. And there's actually video footage showing me sitting there. I look quite belligerent, actually. I look like I'm ready for a fight. And I just saw this recently, this CBS raw footage that Eric Marola dug up for the film that he made, Second Opinion. Well, it felt like I was in the battle of a lifetime. And it has turned out to be the battle of a lifetime because it's been, 40 years next week that I've been involved one way or another in this struggle.
The interesting thing is it was your 10-year-old son at the time who said to you, Dad, you can't continue to work for them and against them. You can't do this forever.
Right. And I mean, it was so obvious, right? But I had gone on for years trying to do that. And to the point of leaking the documents. On my 32nd birthday, I had lunch with Dr. Segura and got him to give me the laboratory notes, which I then gave to the New York Times.
To Jane Brody at the New York Times.
Correct, with no good results from that.
She's been called by Time magazine. She's still working at the New York Times. She's their health reporter. She's been called the high priestess of
mm-hmm.
health.
Right.
And yet, according to your book, what she did is call only the administrators at Sloan Kettering and never talked with Dr. Segura.
Yes, he said that he had never met her, and there's no indication in her article that she had talked to him. So she came with a list of the top people she wanted to speak to and then basically shot it down.
So her report was another anti-Laetril.
Oh, it was devastating, absolutely devastating. And this was before the official press release. But in the book, I go into great detail about how the cover-up was constructed. And having been there and having, to a small degree, taken part in the cover-up, although I tried my best to avoid having to do so, but it was quite clever. I mean, maybe not clever is not quite the right word. I mean, they were responding at every moment to the challenge of the moment, but these were smart people. And the biggest one, as you said, was to substitute a method for determining whether metastases are present or not that nobody else in the world ever picked up
this
on.
This bioassay. No one used it then, and no one uses it today.
No one had used it before. No one used it then. And amazingly, I looked at Dr. Chester Stock and Dr. Daniel Martin and Robert Good and all the Sloan Kettering people. As soon as the Laetril paper was over, they went back to using Segura's method.
Well, I mean, though they discredited it.
Correct. In the bioassay, you took some tissue from the lung. You took the lungs, actually, from one animal and injected them into the other animal. And then you waited, Martin would wait a week or so to see whether or not any bump appeared.
Whether a tumor was growing.
Correct. He called that a tumor, a bump. And then if they felt with their hands that there was a bump, they declared that mouse to be cancerous. Well, these bumps appeared because there was inflammation at the site of the injection. Segura told me at the time, and it's obvious, that if you wait long enough, the bumps go down because the inflammation goes down. So there is a significant difference, but not if you do the bioassay in the way that Martin and others were doing it, in which case, of course, every mouse got bumps, every mouse was so-called cancerous, and there was no difference between the two sets of animals. But if you did it Segura's way, you actually looked at under the microscope or had an independent person look under the microscope, there was a huge difference.
One of the things Segura said about Laetrile that he thought was most important was its palliative properties, that it made these mice feel better, look better, eat better, and it seemed to reduce pain.
That's right. And that was the most dramatic effect in the animal studies. Segura was always very proper. You know, he said, Laetrile is not a cure for cancer. It is a good palliative drug. Palliation, in this case, including prevention of spread of the tumor to the lungs of the animals, those were highly important. But he wanted to disassociate himself from the people who were running around saying Laetrile was a cure for cancer. So he emphasized the palliative nature. But palliation is very important. As anybody who's dealt with cancer probably knows, this can be a very painful disease, and we don't have, really still to this day, don't have adequate ways of controlling the pain. You don't throw away promising agents. I mean, it's as simple as that. I'm not saying people should have used it. I'm not saying Sloan Kettering should use it. I'm not saying people should use it today, Laetrile. What I'm saying is that was the best agent for stopping metastases that the cancer establishment had up until that point.
Do we have something better today?
Well, there are some interesting ideas out there. My good friend Michael Retzky at Harvard says that he thinks that anti-inflammatory drugs, simple NSAIDs given after surgery, might prevent metastases. And by the way, amygdalin itself may be an anti-inflammatory. Correct. So I'm not saying that we haven't made progress in the last 30 years, but at that point, that was the best agent.
What do you think are today the most promising alternative or complementary modalities that should be pursued?
I have strong ideas on this. First of all, I think the two things that are done in the best of the complementary clinics abroad are hypothermia or heat therapy in conjunction with immune therapy. I think this
Which is something that Dr. Old
absolutely. Dr. Old
supported.
More than. He was really the one instrumental person. He raised $200 million for this kind of research.
But, and we're talking about harnessing our own immune system
correct,
to battle cancer.
Correct. And just this month, the Mayo Clinic announced that they had cured or put into complete remission of an advanced case of cancer using measles vaccine. It's the standard measles vaccine, but they gave it in a huge dose. The woman in question developed a severe headache and fever of 105 degrees, but on the other end of that, she was cured of her cancer. So I have been for 25 years, been a strong proponent of viral therapy for cancer. Again, it's an experimental technique. It's being used in some of the complementary clinics in Europe, sometimes with great success.
Do you think that your book might revive interest in the United States in studying Laetrile?
Yes, I feel pretty sure that it could, and I'd like to help in any effort to do that. I have a feeling, though, that more likely that research will first take place in Europe or in China than in the U.S. There's still quite a barrier to working with Laetrile, and you could call it discredited, but the fact is it's not scientifically discredited.
And yet you say you have no particular animus for Sloan Kettering, that they're as good a cancer research institute as any of them.
Absolutely. I'm not trying to discourage patients from going there. I think patients need to make their decisions about where to go based on the capabilities of the various centers. And Sloan is high up there in almost every kind of cancer. So I'm no way an enemy of Sloan Kettering. In fact, I'm probably the best friend they've had in a long time because I'm trying to get them to sort of clean the stables. And they've allowed this falsehood of what went on to grow and to sit there.
Like a cancer.
Well, maybe. Maybe.
And on that note, we're out of time. Thank you so much for talking with us.
You're welcome.
That was Dr. Ralph Moss, who has written 10 books on cancer. He is a board member of the Cancer Prevention Coalition and was a founding advisor to the NIH Office of Alternative Medicine. His newest book is Doctored Results, The Suppression of Laetrile at Sloan Kettering Institute for Cancer Research. To hear more of this interview, check the links at our website, wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.